Hey, Spittin' Chiclets listeners, you can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 404 of Spittin' Chiclets, presented by Pink Whitney, from our friends at New Amsterdam Vodka here in the Barstool Sports Podcast family. What's going on, everyone? We hope you enjoyed our surprise episode last week. The boys got a little horny for the audience. We got back together, gave our takes on some outrageous things going on. I should say the takes were outrageous, but hopefully you all enjoyed Mike Vernon, thought it was a terrific interview. Great guy. Only one hello this week. We're going to go to our boy, our producer, Mikey Granelli. What's going on, buddy?
What's up, RA? To be honest, I'm a little thankful summer is coming to an end here. I'm kind of getting sick of always having to be somewhere on the weekends. And, you know, I kind of get FOMO when I have to stay in. So I'm very excited for fall, but...
Hey guys, it's Big Cat and Fight Week is here. Rough and Rowdy 24 invades Clarksburg, West Virginia this Friday night, April 19th at 8 p.m. Eastern for the first time since Rough and Rowdy won. Every single fight will be a brand new brawler, and we found the wildest hillbillies the holler has to offer. Order now to enjoy 20 amateur matchups with no headgear, plus our live ring girl contest after the final bell. These country roads are being paved with blood and grit and balls. Join me and Dave on the call for Rough and Rowdy 24 tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern. Witness all the chaos with pay-per-view replay available all weekend long on buyrnr.com. That's buyrnr.com.
We released it 4 years ago before we even had a YouTube page. So a lot of our listeners haven't even seen it yet. And third and most importantly, this week we launch Biz Nasty Does the Coast. 3 episodes coming out the next 3 Wednesdays at 8 p.m. EST. On our YouTube channel. We hit Paradise in Orlando. Then we celebrated Derek Nesbitt's 1,000th game. And we wrapped up with a homecoming for Busy Boy in Wheeling, West Virginia with Nick and KB. So subscribe to our YouTube channel. You'll get everything there first. This is elite content. The production is sandbagger-esque and it rivals any media company making hockey content. So please give it a watch so we can continue to make more hockey content like this. And I guess that's enough plugging for me, RA. I would love to hear about how the rest of your Newfoundland trip went.
Wow. Yeah, I'll tell you, boys, that place kicks your ass. Like St. John's, Newfoundland. I mean, they say if you're there, there's 2 things to do. You eat and you drink and a few other things as well. But I definitely ate. I definitely drank. And I will tell you, one thing I did miss up there was getting my Pink Whitney fix. But now that I'm back in Massachusetts, I can hit up my local liquor store, one of the many fine pit stop bars I like to stop in here for that 5 times distilled vodka infused with fresh pink lemonade flavor. Like I always say, I like it with a little bit of club soda, but you might want a nice refreshing shot of the old Pink Whitney. So get some of that birdie juice. Get some of that Pink Whitney. Good stuff.
RA, actually, tons of new Pink Whitney merch in the store right now. I'm actually wearing one of the t-shirts, and we were kind of talking about it before you came on. We have tons of new merchandise right now in the store. It's Pink Whitney, Spittin' Chiclets, and we've just completely upped the quality. It's just like you've kind of always given me a little shit about that before. We got to up the t-shirt quality. We got to up the t-shirt quality. Well, we finally did. We heard you guys, and we got some nice Pink Whitney merch coming, or it's here.
It is here. It is here. Check it out, BarstoolSportsStore.com. And also, of course, we have a Canadian site. You just click on the little flag up top, go over to the Canadian flag. You get all the Canadian merchandise, Canadian price, so you don't have to pay the crazy taxes, all that stuff. So anyways, back to Newfoundland, man. This place is awesome. I mean, you know, I've been to Ontario. I've been to Quebec, province-wise, Alberta, British Columbia. But no place have I ever been like Newfoundland, man. Just the beautiful scenery. And I only saw snippets of it. I mean, we went out to Petty Harbor to do the zip line thing there. But next time I go, I want to go to the western part where it's actual mountains. I was corrected. What I was calling mountains last week were merely hills. But it was just beautiful. The people there, I mean, no surprise, Canadians are always awesome to us. But the hospitality they showed towards me was just awesome. Dispensaries seemingly every 10 feet, open at 10 o'clock on a Sunday. So you got to buzz on a few pops, you pop in, boom, grab a couple half dozen bones, you're good for the night.
I do have a question because when I was in Newfoundland, I got screeched in. Did you get screeched in and explain to all of our listeners that don't know what getting screeched in is? Explain to them that.
Absolutely. Well, first, the day started with a boat ride. We went looking for icebergs and whales, but I guess the season had already passed, so there was really not much to see with whale watching. And that, you know, Mr. Ryan Senior, aka Senior, he told me they call it Iceberg Alley. Like when the glaciers break off, I mean, you'll just look up and it'll be a 10-story iceberg just going by, like taller than any buildings. It's insane. Unfortunately, that wasn't in season, but we got a beautiful boat ride just outside the harbor. I didn't know how much of Newfoundland was related to World War II history, like, because, you know, if you went to that harbor, it's real high on both sides. They would have a net or a chain to catch.
Hey, TR loves talking about that too. How many times did he tell you?
Oh, and that's the other thing too, G, before I get to the screech in, how proud Newfoundlanders are with it from, but not like overbearing and not jingoistic, not like national. It's just, they just love where they're from. They love the history and they're so proud of it. And you can sense it talking to them. And, you know, it's very interesting to sell. I mean, I'm not a World War II historian, but there was so much I didn't know. So
it's almost like its own country, RA.
It used to be. It used to be until, I believe, 1949. I think I was paying attention. I was paying attention, senior. 1949, they got screeched in by the rest of Canada, I guess you might say. But yeah, it's very distinct, very independent. So up to the screeched in portion, we were on the boat all day, hit a couple bars. Of course, I was with the con man, Connor Donaghy, great guy with the big deal selects. You know, we were feeling pretty good. So we went to this bar, Christian's, and you get screeched in. What they do is they, first they give a speech, you might say. The bartender gives a history of a lot of Newfoundland and, you know, their independence. And that's probably where I learned some of the stuff I just talked about. And then they give you a shot of rum and they pull out an old codfish. Well, I said old, it was a frozen codfish. And you kiss the cod and you do a shot of the screech rum. And then they give you a certificate as an honorary Newfoundlander and you get screeched in. And what's interesting is the guy who I got screeched in by was the same guy who screeched in Anthony Bourdain, the late Anthony Bourdain. What he did, I think it was Parts Unknown. I know he had the No Reservations and Parts Unknown. I think
he screeched me in too.
Same guy, yeah, with the Christians. Great, great guy. And he actually told a real nice story about Anthony Bourdain. It was very poignant. Just, you know, you're going to have fun and drink and kiss a fish. And interestingly enough, I got my first zit in my mouth in about 20 years after the cod. Hopefully that's not related to kissing a fish. But he actually gave a very poignant speech about, you know, how Anthony Bourdain was there not long before he passed away, and just kind of talked about how you never know people going through and just to be kind. And it actually brought a tear to my eye sitting there. I just wasn't expecting it, but it's a huge tradition there. If you do visit St. John's in Newfoundland, I highly, highly recommend it. It's a fun thing. And then speaking of cod, I probably ate 10 pounds of it up there last week. Cause I mean, every menu, pan fried cod was on the menu. I literally probably ordered it 5 times. Cause I mean,
halibut too, right? Isn't the halibut big up there as well?
I don't know how, if it's as native as the cod is. I'm sure they get some of it, but see, cod was, it was overfished. All these like other countries were bringing big trawlers and they basically overfished it. And Canada said, nope, no more cod fishing in our waters until they replenish the stocks. And now I guess you can just drop your rod in and pull cod out all day. So it's plentiful again, which is great. And it's good eating. So I got tons of cod fishing. Like I said, I probably ordered 5 of them while I was there. And then the last night I had to go to Terry Ryan Senior's basement. I mean, you don't visit St. John's, Newfoundland and not go to Senior's basement. And it's a trip, man. He's almost like a teenager in some regards. I don't mean that disrespectfully. He's got all like rock magazine covers cut out and like just adorned all over the walls by the bathroom door. He's got every jersey him and Terry had. It's just a wild trip. And of course, you know, Senior himself is just an absolute piece of work. So
crazy Terry Ryan stories while you were there that you can tell on the podcast?
No, I mean, I wouldn't say even off the podcast. I mean, like I said, gee, I know you were there. You guys were doing a little bit of work there, but this was just literally like go out eating and drinking, wake up and just start over again. I mean, that's what you go there for, to eat, drink. Water Street, George Street area. Awesome, man. Like just all these outdoor patios. You just sit outside. And I was trying to think of a place and compare it to in Boston. And I really couldn't. Like I know some people say like the North End or Faneuil Hall, but there's no place set up like it's basically these two streets like parallel. And there's just tons of bars, dispensaries, and it's right by the water. So yeah.
Not to plug more content, yeah, RA, but absolutely. Biz actually went all around, Biz and I actually went all around Newfoundland with Terry Ryan a few years back and we filmed it all, and it's on our YouTube channel. It's under Road Warriors, the Newfoundland Extravaganza. Terry basically took us to all these places you're talking about. We even went and saw the iceberg. So it was an unbelievable experience. So you can check it out on our YouTube channel.
Absolutely. Just a beautiful spot. I can't wait to visit again and see way more of the place. Like I said, I didn't even get to the west part, the mountains, but the only, I guess, bummer is that there's no direct flights from Boston. Cause if there was, it's, you know, a straight shot, almost going to Halifax, except a little further. So going out, people like, oh, You went through Montreal. How come you went through Montreal? I was like, okay, if I book my flight through Pearson Airport, because it's either Toronto or Montreal, if I actually booked my flight through Pearson and it was late, people would be like, you are the biggest asshole in the world for booking a flight to Newfoundland through Toronto after what Whit went through after the whole after the whole Pearson Airport episode. So I booked it through Trudeau in Montreal, which I guess probably still rolling the dice if Justin made a phone call and got to be held up in Montreal. But it was a great time, and I definitely will be back. So shout out to St. John's, Newfoundland. Also, shout out Greg at the Alt Hotel. I don't believe I mentioned the hotel last time. Greg, the general manager, very generous to let me record the last show in there. He's got some T-shirts and some gear coming. So if you do stay in Newfoundland at St. John's, the Alt Hotel is a great spot.
All right. I actually do have a funny story. I don't think I've ever told it on the podcast before. And thank God Biz isn't on here, because he'd probably kill me if he heard this. But when we went to St. John's, Newfoundland last time, I didn't know that there was a St. John's, New Brunswick.
I believe it's St. John, New Brunswick, right?
St. John, New Brunswick.
I got
those two confused. So I booked our entire film crew to New Brunswick, not Newfoundland. Man. So they got there a day early, and they messaged me and were like, hey, I'm at this hotel. Come meet up with me here. I look it up. I'm like, that hotel's in New Brunswick. We're in Newfoundland. And they're like, dude, you booked a crew in New Brunswick, not Newfoundland. So we had to scramble. Luckily, I think Terry helped us find a crew in Newfoundland to help us film. But I was scrambling at that point, because I also didn't want to tell Biz that I had made that mistake. So yeah, it was, I had to learn my Canadian geography next time I started booking trips for the boys.
And then the next day, Bastou hired a travel coordinator.
Exactly.
Map in front of them. But so anyways, we got Labor Day coming up this weekend. Jesus Christ, that came quick. You got any plans? What's going on for Labor Day, G?
Like I said, no plans, RA. I'm just going to relax. It's self-care September for me. I'm taking a step back from drinking. I'm taking a step back from going out, eating unhealthy, from takeout. So self-care September for this guy, right before leading up into Big Deal Brewing coming out in October. Yes, I want to be ready. I want to be ready to go for the beer. So I'm going to take a little time and try to get healthy these next couple weeks. How about yourself?
Yeah, I need a little break after Newfoundland. I wouldn't go to relaxing vacation, but I'm actually heading down to Charleston, South Carolina this weekend. I can't say too much about it, but I'm going to be filming a small role in an independent film that's going to be filmed down in there. I think I could say the role.
Let's go.
I had to decline a role as a referee because I told them if you had me as a ref, my skating is so bad it would kill any credibility for the movie might have. So I'm actually going to be playing, I think I could give this out, a Zamboni driver for the show. I got a few speaking lines, so I'll be down in Charleston, South Carolina area for Labor Day, spending a few days there, going to hit the beach, and, you know, in between my filming, my scenes, of course. So
I've heard Charleston, South Carolina is absolutely gorgeous. I heard it's an incredible place to visit.
Yeah, I've actually never been. I've been to, I flew into Columbia. I went to a South Carolina, Florida football game. But yeah, I've never been to the coast of South Carolina, so I cannot wait. Obviously, it can pump up the IMDb page a little bit more, get a couple more credits on there. I'll talk more about the title and stuff when more comes out. I can't say too much about it now. But needless to say, very excited to go film another role and head to South Carolina. But, gee, I think it's time we should move to today's guest. We haven't even mentioned him yet. Might just be an all-time top five, top 10 episode, possibly. Hockey Hall of Famer Dino Cicerelli. This guy was an incredible interview. Our buddy Corey Smutledge bumped into him. What do they call that? That lake?
Pudding Bay in Ohio.
Pudding Bay in Ohio. They randomly bumped into this 60-year-old Jack Tan guy hanging out. Small talked them. We ended up getting on the show. So thanks, Corey, for getting him. It's a great interview. You're going to love it. And want to let you know that his interview is brought to you by our friends at Sling TV. Sling TV has something for everyone. All your favorite shows on your favorite channels, all right at your fingertips. What you watch is up to you. It really just depends on what kind of a mood you're in. So if you're looking for sports, Sling's got you covered with pro and college football and basketball, baseball, hockey, soccer, golf, racing, and so much more. Sling also has reality TV, so you can keep up with the latest gossip, today's hottest shows on channels like TLC, Bravo, MTV, and more. And if you're a news junkie, well, you can stay up to date on the news with MSNBC, CNN, and Fox News. Also, if you're feeling adventurous, explore thousands of movies and shows on demand. So what kind of mood are you in? No matter what your answer, Sling has what you need. And getting Sling is easy. You sign up and start watching in just 5 minutes. You can stream on any device and record up to 50 hours with included DVR space. And the best part is you can pause or customize your subscription at any time. So check out sling.com/barstool for special offers. Sling, the live TV you love for a price you love. And now, enjoy Dino Ciccarelli. All right, it's time to bring on our guest. This hard-nosed right wing was never drafted yet went on to play 19 NHL seasons with Minnesota, Washington, Detroit, Tampa Bay, and Florida. He put up exactly 1,200 regular season points, 608 of which were goals, giving him the most goals ever by a draft-eligible player who was not drafted by an NHL team. And in 2010, he was inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame. We're happy to welcome to the Spittin' Chicklets podcast, Dino Ciccarelli. How you been, Dino?
I'm great, guys. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. Where are you coming to us from?
I'm from Harrison Township, Michigan, just a suburb outside of Detroit, about 30 miles just west of the city.
Nice. You still in the bar business? I know you had owned some bars after you retired.
Yeah, I don't know how I got into it, but...
I do.
Actually, what happened was there was an article and story because, you know, pregame stuff, you know, or team parties, I was always running the music in the dressing room.
Like Biz, and but then, you played.
So some story came out that I said, you know, that after I retire, I'll probably open up a bar. So the one township called Shelby Township in Michigan reached out to me and said, hey, when you're retired, you know, we'll give you a liquor license if you want to open up a bar in our township. And that's exactly what happened. So basically give me $100,000 liquor license. And I'm going on my 20th year now. So it's been pretty good. It's been fun.
I'm going to shift the focus of the interview to your DJing skills in the locker room. Now, how did you end up getting the aux quarter at that time? I think it was the 8-track. And what would you play for the boys? How would you align the playlists? Who were the go-tos? I'll leave it up to you to tell us.
Well, the best advice I got a long time ago, even when I was playing, if you can make 80% of the people happy, whether it's the guys in the locker room or 500 people at my bar, you're doing a hell of a job. So... So I obviously came up in the 80s, so it was a lot of the 80s music, a lot of the rock and roll, you know, Def Leppard and shit. I can't even think of them all now, but you guys all know. You're old enough to know all those songs.
Was there music in the locker room pregame from the time you got into the league, or was that as the career kind of got on and technology, I guess, with like boom boxes and shit got better?
No, it was music. I can't remember. I think... there was a certain time the music had to go off and, you know, focus. Okay. I forget what it was, but it was always, the music was always on and, you know, it was always upbeat. You know, the Russians always wanted their own different kind of music, but they didn't have enough guys in the locker room to overrule me.
And then the country gets a little painful, but you got to keep the guys from Western Canada happy, and that's how they get their juices flowing pregame.
Yeah, we did. We got the country going, too. I remember that. We had, even Stevie Eiserman, when I was in Detroit, there was that era, I can't remember, it was maybe early 90s when the country really started coming out. And I remember we were going to Calgary a bunch of times, and the boys had the boots and the hats out, and that's where we learned how to two-step.
Oh, I thought Stevie Y would be more of like a gangster rap kind of guy, maybe like Snoop Dogg or something.
Maybe I'm not supposed to say that. You know, Stevie might get in trouble still. So.
Oh, I know. He's wound up a little tight, but he's doing a hell of a job. Now, okay, so you weren't drafted. Did that have anything to do with that nasty leg break you went through growing up?
Well, that had everything to do with it. It was my second year junior, and Gretz's, Wayne Gretzky's first year. He was in Sault Ste. Marie, and I was in London. And we just... we were just going into the playoffs, and we were in the semifinals against Hamilton going into game seven, and it was the night before, and we just had a light skate at the London Gardens, and I slipped on something on the ice, and I went sliding into the end boards, and I broke my right femur.
Oh, so Jesus.
I was just coming off a great year, too, you know. And it's probably the only time I beat Wayne in scoring. I ended up having 72 goals. He had 70. but he had about three times as many assists as I did.
Well, I was actually I was at an exhibition game. I wasn't playing. Kid Taylor Fadun broke his femur. I will never forget the screams and the amount of help he needed. Like, how was the pain on something like that? And are you right away thinking, like, am I ever going to play hockey again?
Well, I can remember it because it happened. It was right to the right of the net, and you know, at the arena in London. And I was laying on the ice and kind of sitting up, if you can picture, but my right leg where the break was went dead right. Oh, you know what I mean?
What?
And the screaming was crazy. You know, it basically took me 2 years to get back.
Wow.
And, you know, I don't, you probably know the rest of the story. I mean, I went through two drafts where I wasn't picked. I mean, can't blame the teams for, not wanting this guy. It's like the old horse, right? They break their leg. You know, yeah. The only good thing they didn't shoot me. You know what
the
I mean?
The glue factory.
You're fucked
so,
up.
Really, there was only two. Scotty Bowman was in Buffalo at the time. He showed a little bit of interest, but Lou Nanny was in Minnesota. And, you know, his thoughts were, listen, this guy could score goals before he broke his leg, so let's give him a chance, sign him to a minor league contract, which they did. And my first contract, I remember, it was a two-way contract. I make 18,000 of them playing with the North Stars and 12,000 playing in Oklahoma City. So that was back in, 81. So anyway, I got a second chance, made the best of it. I started off pretty good in Oklahoma City. I got called up three quarters of the way through the season, and that's the year we went to the finals and lost against the Islanders.
So going back just a little bit, when you have those 2 years, you've been through this awful injury, then you get the 2 years you're non-drafted, is that something that just drove you, like complete fuel to be like, I can play in the NHL, fuck all these teams who didn't draft me?
Well, yeah, the doctors, obviously, you know, they said it was a severe break, and they weren't giving me, you know, whether they wanted to put it, you know, in my head that chances of me coming back weren't great.
Yeah.
So, you know, I wasn't going to let that bother me. We had, I don't know if you remember the great, he passed away a few years ago, Don Brankley. He was a trainer for the London Knights for 30 some years. He was instrumental, you know, just talking to me, going through treatment all the time and saying, look, you know, you're going to get another chance. You're going to, you know, keep working at the therapy. And it took a while because it didn't seem like it was getting better for, you know, the first year, the first 8 months. And then I started playing again my last year in junior. I still scored 50 goals, but it just didn't seem the same. And, you know, everything clicked. I want to say the final year, you know, when I started in Oklahoma City, I started scoring and I started getting the confidence. And of course I'm playing with a little bit of chip on my shoulder because I wanted to get there. And, you know, I was pretty fortunate. I got a second chance.
You just mentioned the London trainer. Was he not living at the rink as well? He's just this like legendary trainer that everybody knows about at the junior level in Ontario.
Yeah. Anybody that's ever played for the Knights or, you know, back in that era. Yeah. He lived there. He treated his players like the best, better, you know, like your parents. And he was the guy that was, like I said, instrumental for me, you know, therapy every day, mentally telling me, hey, you're going to get another chance. You know, don't give up. And he played a big part of me coming back.
It must be nuts to see what the London Knights have turned into. It's this monster franchise. It's the best, one of the best franchises in junior hockey. They spend more money than the Dallas Cowboys on players. But to see what that's worth and what the Hunters have done, like, it must be crazy to see, looking back at how long ago you played there.
Well, it was great. You know, we had an opportunity. You know, my brothers ended up buying the Sarnia Sting, so we owned them for...
Oh, nice.
Hometown.
Yeah, so but prior to that, or during that, we had an opportunity to buy the London Knights before the Hunters did. And that was when we were in the old London Gardens. But kudos to those guys, man. Yeah. They turned it around. And it's like anything. Those guys, Mark and Dale, are these guys work their ass off all the time. And they deserve everything they got. And it comes back to recruiting for them, right? These guys, I mean, you got the best players. You're finding the best players. You're getting success. You're winning. And the people are going to come out, and they've done such a great job for And, you know, they don't have much of a payroll, you know, and they're getting 10, 12,000 people a game. So go figure. Good for those guys.
Yeah, they better be buying rounds on the golf course.
Yeah, while we're on the Sarnia sting, a current player that we're all watching tonight is Steven Stamkos. Did you have a say in picking him? Did you do some recruiting there? How'd that all go?
Well, again, I was still involved, but not as much. But I did see him prior, and yeah, it was a no-brainer. You know, when we picked Steven, I think he was first overall anyway. And then when he did go to Tampa, his first year there wasn't, you know, who I think during Rick Tocchet was his coach. So I don't think that was handled probably the first handle.
It was
the right
Melrose.
Way.
It was Barry Melrose.
No, Barry Melrose
beginning.
Said, he goes, I don't think this guy can even play maybe. And Talk ended up taking over shortly thereafter. And they had him on like a workout plan where he'd play one or two, sit out and work out in the gym, and then kind of get his strength for the NHL level.
Was that was Barry?
That was Barry.
Barry said he couldn't play, and then they fired him.
No wonder he's not coaching anymore.
Yeah, that's why I'm doing television, too. I don't know shit about hockey.
So, no, it's great to see. He's had so much success. He's such a great player, you know, and he's such a great leader. And, you know, he's still sniping right now. And, you know, he's bringing this team back again. This series is a long ways from being over, yep. I think.
Dino, was Minnesota the only team that gave you an offer after you weren't drafted?
They gave me one offer, and it was, I didn't care about the money, to be honest. I just wanted another opportunity, you know what I mean? And I wanted to make the best of it, and I was pretty fortunate that I did.
Now, Oklahoma City, I've heard a lot of guys paid their dues there. What's the atmosphere like? Is it a big hockey town? You don't think of Oklahoma City as much of a hockey town?
No, it's not. It wasn't, but I remember all the guys, we all lived in one complex. It was like 25 minutes away. It was across the freeway from the biggest country bar in town. So, you know, it's where we had our team meetings all the time. So, but it was an opportunity again. You know, we had a decent team. You know, we were traveling the bus quite a bit down there. You're playing in Texas and Houston and Tulsa. Different hockey atmosphere from what I was used to, you know, playing for London. But again, it was an opportunity for me, and I had some good people on my side.
Well, you referenced that first year in which you guys made that cup run. Like, was it playoffs where you really solidified yourself, or being like, I for sure can play in this league, I can be a top performer in this league, and then also maybe proving to your coach at the time that the next year it was automatic, you were coming in and you had that spot solidified?
Well, I think it takes a while. Yeah, I mean, I had some pretty good success. I was put on a line, kind of like I had a rookie line. We had Neil Broughton, my centerman, and Tom McCarthy was my left winger. And, you know, that first round in the playoffs, we played against the Bruins. And I'll never forget that, because we went into the Boston Garden, and, you know, their team, they had Stan Jonathan, Al Secord, O'Reilly. They had a real tough team. And before the opening faceoff, I think we still set a record for most penalty minutes in a playoff game. All five guys on the ice, not me, all our starting guys against their guys before the puck even dropped before game one. It was a brawl. It was
no
the old school
way. Come on.
That's how game one started?
That's how game one started. So they tried to intimidate us. They tried to intimidate us. And I remember Al McAdam squared off, and Bobby Smith was out there, and Steve Payne. So we did pretty good in the fights. And I think that's what really gave us the confidence, because we ended up winning game one. I think we won the series. It was a 3-5. We won it in four games. So I think that's what kind of started us off that year. And then we went into Buffalo and beat them in five, and then beat Calgary in six. And then we lost to the Islanders in five games. So, I think that series against Boston really kind of gave us the confidence and thought, you know what, they're not going to push us around.
I think your MO, and I think the way that most people know you, is your fearlessness around the net, tipping pucks, and just finding a knack for around the blue paint. How did you learn that? Who taught you that? Were you just always that naturally gifted around the blue paint?
Well, I think my game changed a little bit. You know, when I was in Minnesota and even Washington, I was more of the you know, I always had a nose for the net. I wanted to score goals. I think when I came to Detroit, I remember coming over and I thought, okay, they got Yzerman, they got Fedorov, they got Lindstrom, they got Coffey. How am I going to get on that first power play? You know? So I better be in front of the net because I'm not taking any one of those other guys' jobs. So that's kind of where my game changed to more like in front of the net and that part of it from a positional player. And the best that somebody gave me was
advice.
I mean, besides my dad was pretty tough on me. You know, he was always, if I scored two, I should have scored three, right? And if we lost and I scored three, you know what? I could have scored four, but he was always pushing me, good and bad kind of thing. You know what I mean? But the best compliment that I ever got was that I'm like a dog on a bone. You know what I mean? And I always wanted to score goals when I was a kid, and I carried that through my NHL career.
You know, guys still really had to prove themselves in that era as far as fighting. How often did you have to fight at, like, every few games back then, or did guys kind of leave you alone after you carved out a spot for yourself, maybe using your stick?
Well, it's funny. Lou Nanny told me my first couple of years because, you know, I wasn't going to back down, even though I'm 5'10". Lou Nanny brought me aside and said, Dino, you're 5'10". You're fighting these guys that are 6'2", 6'3". You're going to be out of the sea before you know it if you keep this up. He goes, there's other ways of being tough, like, you know, keeping your stick up. You don't got to fight these guys. And you know, a couple suspensions, a couple major penalties. You know, people around the league learn that you're a little crazy, and they tend to leave you alone a little bit.
Yeah, set the example early.
You got to get respect one way or another, and unfortunately, it's a game of intimidation, right? So Absolutely. These guys, everybody's always trying to intimidate, get you off your game. You know, you want to survive. The smaller guys want to survive. You know, they got to fight back.
You mentioned your father, obviously very close to growing up, watching a lot of your games, always driving with you and maybe talking about the games afterward.
Oh, all the time. Well, I mean, my career in London, you know, with Major Junior A, you can go as far as Sault Ste. Marie and Sudbury. And I think over 4 years, my dad maybe only missed two or three games. So
no way.
Holy shit.
He was always there. He's always making the road trips
That's
with
awesome.
The other parents. A lot of homemade wine trips, you know. but he pushed me pretty hard, you know. Some people think it's too hard, but that's what drove me, you know, to always be successful.
And a dad like that who was always there for you, but also, like you said, pushing you, is he forcing you to shoot pucks when you're even younger, before you went to junior, when you were still living at home?
He had to stomp on the grapes all summer. That's how we got the quick feet back.
Listen, we'd be playing in arenas, even in the NHL. We'd be in Minnesota. I could still hear his voice yelling at me.
Always.
You know what I mean? But they're the best. That's your parents, right?
Yeah.
So they push you, but they love you. And, you know, he was always there. And even when we were in, like, Chicago, we played – remember the old stadium in Chicago? They hated me there. And they hated me there because we played there maybe 12 times a year. And so Al Secord, he was in Hamilton. We had the biggest rivalry, right? So we both hated each other. This guy motivated me to be tough too, because he was bigger and he was always coming after me, you know? So when we started playing these guys at Chicago Stadium, I always scored in that arena. So they had the old chance going that Dino sucks, you know, those years when I was in Minnesota, that drove me crazy playing. My dad would go to these games and, you know, got the whole stadium yelling at me. He's trying to pick fights with everybody. I said, Dad, you can't go in that stadium and start shit. You know, I just sit there, watch the game, because they're going to be pouring beer on you. And sure enough, that's what happened. You know, so
I wonder where you got it from.
Always, he was a huge supporter for sure.
That's unbelievable.
Dino, the decade you were in Minnesota, I mean, I think you were the only Hall of Famer on that roster for a good while. And, you know, you had some good players there. How were you guys so competitive? Was it coaching? Was it the players in the room, a combination? Because, you know, you guys were in the Cup in 81, and then I got back a little bit after you left.
Yeah, well, like I said, we had some luck. We had some good players come up in 81. I think the next year we were first, we finished first, and we lost first round. But, you know, we had some good coaches. We had some good players there. Craig Hertzberg was our captain for a bunch of years. You know, Bobby Smith was a good leader. Steve Payne, Al McAdam. You know, Neil Broughton was probably, you know, I tell people he was probably me, you know, probably my best centerman that I've ever had. You know, even though I've had guys with – I've had Stevie as a centerman. I've had Fedorov for 2 years as a centerman. But, you know, Neil was like the ultimate all-around, you know, centerman. You know, he was out there every – whether it was for a face-off, penalty killing, empty net, power play, he was, you know, he was always looking for me. You know, he'd be the type of guy, wouldn't shoot in the empty net. He would wait till I got there and dish it off to me. You know what I mean? So, you know, I was fortunate to play for him for like 8 years in Minnesota.
There's a funny viral clip where Scott Stevens is giving it to Brian Bellows. I know you were not on the team when that ended up going down. Have you seen it when they're chirping him from the bench?
I don't, but I can imagine. I haven't seen that, but I played with Scotty for 4 years in Washington, and we actually drove together to the rink because our houses were close to each other. And then, a couple of years later, we're at each other's throats because we're playing each other in the finals. You know what I mean?
Okay. But that was his game where he'd be chirping nonstop. Now, what was Brian Bellows like as a guy? Because I think you might be the first guy I've ever been able to ask. And you played quite some time with him. Obviously, very skillful. But what was his personality like?
He was kind of quiet, laid-back guy. You know what I mean? You know, he really didn't kind of stir it up a little bit, but he'd stick his nose in there. Totally gifted guy, great goal scorer, but kind of quiet guy on the sidelines though.
I'm gonna have to send you that clip afterward. I think you'd get a good chuckle.
It was Trache. Yeah.
Well, it was Trache and was it Scott Stevens? Yeah, I meant to say Kevin Stevens. My apologies, my friend.
Well, Scott's gotten a few fights and arguments with a bunch of guys.
Yeah. Again, I might have confused you there. I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. I mean, we all know Scotty. He's as competitive as can be. You know, it doesn't matter if it was his brother or his best friend. He's going to play the same way and go after you.
Dino, I want to go back to Neil Broad for a sec. I know he was a young guy, but he was part of the Team USA Miracle on Ice. Did he ever talk smack to any of the Canadians or any of the other guys in the room, you know, winning the gold medal there, or did he keep quiet?
He's not too much about that. You know, he's kind of laid back too, but you know, likes to have fun. But the ultimate team player. You know what I mean? I think he ended up winning one or two cups too with New Jersey, and then, you know, obviously the gold medal, and you know, great. He was a great player, great centerman.
Yeah, very underrated.
What about the trade to Washington? I mean, do you know that's coming? I always get so interested in how people find out about trades, if they knew or had any idea it was going to go down. What's your memory of that?
Well, I always tell everybody I got traded for two Hall of Famers.
There you go. That's how good you were.
And then they threw in Bobby. Then they threw in Bob Rouse too. So me and Bob Rouse for Gardner and Larry Murphy. So I see Larry a lot here, and he lives in the Michigan area. So I always, every time I see him, I'm always joking him, you know, with Murph. So it gets him fired up. I always got to end up buying him six beers. He doesn't buy one beer at a time. He buys six at a time.
Another underrated guy you play with, Rod Langway. He's another guy you don't hear much about him as much as we probably should today. How great was he, man?
He was, he's the ultimate leader. You know, he's, you know, from the day I got there, he kind of took me under his wing and, you know, just super friendly guy, the ultimate competitor. I mean, there's a guy that worked his ass off nonstop. He worked his ass off and he had fun too. You know what I mean? This guy, after a game, probably heard that this guy would, between him and Paul Coffey, are the two guys that I've really seen that probably extended my career watching. You know, you would think we just play a game and then you jump in the shower and you go home. But now a guy like Rod Langway and Paul Coffey, these guys would be on a bike after a game after they just played 30 minutes, right? They're on a bike for another 20 minutes. And, you know, you'd ask these guys, like, what are you doing? You just played 30 minutes. They go, well, you know, just you take care of the legs and the legs take care of you, you know. And The difference between Coffee and Langway, though, Rod would get the bike, stationary bike, he'd bring it in the sauna. Chelios used to do this too, but and then he'd be riding that bike for 20 minutes, but he'd be sucking back a six pack in the sauna as well while he was doing it. Both great guys and kept themselves in great shape.
I always wonder, back in that day when you guys were flying, you know, it was commercial, so you're flying the next day, you always get to spend the night in the on the road. Would guys go out to dinner and then hit a bar? Would you even – would you just be skipping dinner after games, going right to the pub?
Well, I mean, that was – I mean, you did both, right? I mean, depending – you did both, right, depending how the game goes. Right?
And the city.
Yeah, good point. So it depends how the game went, you know what I mean? If you won, obviously in your better mood. If you didn't, or what time the plane leaves, or what city you're going to the next day, or, you know, if you're playing back-to-back, kind of thing, you know what I mean? So I mean, that was the one good thing. You know, the guys got to hang out a lot more together and have a little bit of fun on the road.
As far as coach, you went from Brian Murray to Terry Murray. Was there any much of a difference between the two of them? They always seemed to
night and day.
Oh really, huh? In what way?
Night and day. I love Brian Murray. Brian Murray traded me for three different times. So because he was in Washington, and then he brought me from Minnesota to Washington, and he got fired from there, and he went to Detroit, and then he traded for me to come to the Wings when he was general manager there, and then he got fired from there and went to the Panthers. I ended up going to the Panthers at the end of my career with Brian Murray. So he was a huge supporter of mine, and you know, I loved the way he coached. Two different complete styles, you know. Brian Murray would just respect, you know, the player that you were, and he's going to respect that you're going to go out and work your ass off. Unfortunately for him, you know, you're going to get 10 or 15% of the guys that you're not getting the best from, you know, versus a guy like Scotty Bowman that would not, he didn't care who you were. If you're not playing, you're not going to play. You know what I mean? He did it here when I was here, you know, with Yzerman and Fedorov and Coffee. He had everybody pissed off and before the guys won their first cup here. But I'll finish that story in a minute. But comparing Brian to Terry Murray was a hard ass, and he was my, when I went from Tampa to Florida, Terry Murray was the coach. And I remember playing with Pavel Bure too. He was there. He was towards the end of his career. And Terry's theory was, you know, there's no double standards. Like if you're 20 years old or if you're 35, you're still going to skate as much as everybody else, right? And that's what ended up screwing up Pavel's knee. And you know what? That's what I ended up retiring. I'd never skated so hard in my life, you know, skate for Terry. You know, when I was in Tampa Bay, Terry Crisp was the coach. Like, contrast between two coaches. When you get a little older, I think you know what you need and you know what kind of shape you're in, right? You don't got to skate as much as a 20-year-old, right? So Terry was a hard ass. You know, I really believe if he wasn't coaching, I probably would have played a couple more years.
Wow.
But, you know, again, coaching contrast, if they're gonna bag skate the whole team, everybody's skating. There's no exceptions, whether you're 40 or 20. And, you know, obviously – you disagree with that, but it's, you know, and then when I come to Detroit, Scotty was the same too. He let the older guys rest a little bit if they needed it. And that's probably why I got traded here, because I didn't keep my mouth shut. You know, I said in my speech at the Hall of Fame, if I had learned to keep my mouth shut, I probably would have stayed with Detroit and had a couple of rings. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you and Scotty went at it quite a bit, right? You guys butted heads, didn't you?
Well, what happened was, Scotty was a big believer, and we get close to the playoffs, and he wanted the guys fresh and rested. And, you know, like, for example, we played in Detroit one night, and we won. I forget the score. I had a couple goals, and we went right to the airport. We chartered to Ottawa, and because we played there the next night. And, you know, we have the team meeting at noon, lunch. I get up. Assistant coach comes over to me, says, "Hey, Dino," he goes, Scotty's going to sit you tonight. And I'm like, what? What are you talking about? He goes, well, he wants to rest you. Well, instead of keeping my mouth shut, you know, again, I go from scoring two goals the night before to, you know, I want to play. And if you're not going to play me, why don't you just leave me back in Detroit so I can rest? Why fly with the team? And so anyway, those are some things where if I would have kept my mouth shut and understood the big picture with what he's trying to do versus, you know, be honest, being a little selfish, right? So, but I have nothing bad to say about Scotty. You know, it took me over 10 years to get in the Hall of Fame. And then I heard behind the scenes, you know, when I did get inducted, that somebody stood up for me and was your biggest supporter. And they told me it was Scotty Bowman. So
there you go.
It was pretty cool. You know what I mean? Wow. Coming from probably the greatest coach ever to getting me in the Hall of Fame.
That's amazing. And when you found out you were traded to Detroit, it was in the off season, right?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
You must have been fired up though with like the talent that was there. Yeah. Like, oh my God, like I'm gonna have a chance to win a Stanley Cup ultimately, you know, and have a chance at least go on some runs with all these young studs they had.
Yeah, I was on a golf course. We were golfing in Washington when I got the call, and I thought, you know, because obviously I'm 30 minutes from my hometown in Sarnia, Ontario, right? So yeah. I'm going to a powerhouse with all the talent, and you know, again, Brian Murray was a GM here and started me in training camp on a line with with Stevie Yzerman, which played together our first year together. And yeah, I mean, people ask me, I was here for 5 years, where was your best place you played? I mean, we were supposed to win the cup here all five years I was here, you know? And I think we won the President's Trophy a couple times. And I think we still got the record for most points for a team. And yeah, it was just robotic, you know? I mean, we had a powerhouse, we were winning games, and it's just, unfortunately, the best team doesn't always win the Stanley Cup. And, you know, we got knocked out first round by San Jose 1 year, Toronto the next year in game seven. So you just, you know, it takes a lot of luck. It takes a lot of luck to win the cup. And I wasn't one of the fortunate ones to, you know, to win one.
Was Scotty the same way with every player though? Like not a lot of, is personability a word?
Yes. Yes.
Personality? Well,
personability
is.
Not a lot of tummy sticks going on, right? He kind of left the guys in the dark and kept a very, like, you know, the pecking order in line, so to speak.
Well, he knew how to win, and it didn't matter, like I said. And I guess if I ever coached, I would be the same way because,
yeah.
I mean, how do you – was it Larry Murphy – or not Larry Murphy, Larry Robinson, these guys in Montreal – said they hated Scotty for what, 364 days, and on the 365th day, you know, they loved him, right? Because that's when they won the cup, right? So, you know, to try and get the best out of all their players, you know, it happened here in Detroit. I remember sitting at the back of the plane and the bus, and whether it was Stevie or Kopp, they wanted out of here. Like, screw this guy, screw this guy, right? Because Stevie wasn't getting the ice time, or they were sitting me out or whatever, you know, but he had his master plan was to do that, to motivate everybody and to get everybody playing on the same page. And you know, they got rid of me. They got rid of Coffey. They got rid of Primo. You know, they brought in the right guys, but Scotty just knows how to motivate guys. But I think part of it is you're going to suffer until you figure out what his master plan is, and at the end you're going to be happy because you're going to win Stanley Cups.
Now, how did Stevie Y adjust to him right away? Because, you know, he was still putting up monster numbers. I'll bring out Brian Murray's name again. He was a coach before Bowman. So did Bowman, like, sit him down and say, hey, we got to kind of rein your offense in so you play more defense? How did that all transpire?
I don't know if he sat him down, but he sat him down where Stevie wasn't playing as much, or Stevie would take chances on scoring a goal versus playing, you know, defensive hockey. He'd be missing shifts, and Stevie wasn't happy about that. And that was a learning period that he had a plan for each player to mold them how he wanted them. And that's, that's what makes him probably the best coach ever, you know, to be in the game.
You don't really need to yell at him. You just take back their ice, and that'll fuel guys enough, right? Because you go from junior hockey where it's like, hey, if you make the mistake, they're just throwing you right back out there. You start taking their ice time away, that's when you light a real fire under their arse.
Yeah, it was either take their money or their ice time away, and that's how you motivate a guy.
I know in 95 you guys ended up getting to the Cup Final, obviously, like the Devils – they had such a great team. But the year before, I was more interested because I was young. I loved Yzerman. I was 11. He was my favorite player, so I'm watching the Wings. And you guys got upset by the Sharks. That must have been the most shocking playoff defeat of your life, right?
Yeah, well, the Sharks, game seven at home. The goals were so lopsided from the games we won.
Yeah, you beat them like 10-0 all the games you won.
Yeah, and then they beat us by one goal. And then obviously game seven, when Ozzie came out of the net.
Yep.
And I forget who it was that got it on the sideboards and shot in the empty net. But, yeah, that was because the expectations were, so high. I don't know. And then we lost to Toronto, too, and I think the first round in game seven, too, back here. So
Toronto won a first round?
Shut up, Merles, you fucking asshole.
Borchevsky or whatever his name was, another Russian, scores in overtime against us. Yeah, we had some just
this shit
again
bounces.
Like, we were supposed to win almost every year here. Even when we went to the finals with the Devils, that was kind of disappointing because we lost four straight. The first two games at home were one goal games where we should have won, but unfortunately, we couldn't get that series turned around. So, and then 96, 97, I got traded. I think I got traded in August, so that was probably because you got to go through that losing curve before you win, right? Everybody says that. And that's the guys on Detroit went through it. Unfortunately, I left that year, but I was still living in Detroit. I went to Tampa. I mean, personally, I had a good year. We missed the playoffs by 1 point, but I came home and that's when the guys went on the run and won their first cup. So obviously happy for the city and happy for the guys. So, but that was tough to watch personally, not being on the team.
Yeah. I went through something like that and I was not the player you were. It was brutal, but I have to ask because in 96, I think one of the most memorable things about Claude Lemieux's dirty hit on Chris Draper was you after the series and the clip of you saying, I can't believe I shook that fucking guy's hands. So the emotion was so high then, huh?
Well, I think when Drapes got thrown with, cross-checked in the boards, we were losing 2-1 or 3-2. We're all focused. And when they took him off the ice, nobody could really see how bad it was. So that rivalry started when we lost the game and we went in the room and saw Chris on the table. Mm-hmm. Like, you couldn't even recognize his face. That's how bad it was. And that the rivalry really started at that point, and it was like, all right, we have to wait till next year to get back to him, and that's, man to man, that's what the plan was. And of course I'm getting interviewed after the game, and then I said that because I seen Chris too.
Yeah.
And I think that was a sentiment between all the guys in our team. If they would have known that, I don't think anybody would have shaking his fucking hand, right? So,
oh yeah, you hadn't even seen yet. Oh my god, I see what you're saying.
No, we hadn't seen him yet. Nobody saw Chris so that happens. The trainer John, he gets the towel up to the face right away, and then they're going off the ice, and then we're focused on the game. We're losing 3-2 or whatever, so we end up losing the game six. So we're out, shake hands, go in the room. Now we see the extent of the injury.
Yeah,
that's when guys started getting pissed off. And said, you know what? We're going to get the son of a bitch next year. And that's what happened. Unfortunately, I got traded.
Yeah.
You missed out on getting to kill someone.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I did. I was in Tampa. I was in Tampa, and we're playing Colorado. And it's because during that whole playoffs with Colorado, Wah was giving me the whole stick between the legs, you remember?
Yeah. He's getting the balls.
Cup check.
And the fucking league was letting it go. And because I never retaliated, and he never got called on those penalties. But so fast forward a year later in Tampa, we're losing 4-0. There's maybe 5 minutes left in the game. And guess what? He does it again.
Oh,
So I just had flashbacks. I turned around and I just two-handed him right across the chin. His mask went around about four times. I look over to the I look at the Colorado bench, and here comes half the team out.
Oh no!
So I got paid back. I got my payback back a little bit, but I happen to be on another team. So
I just want to go back playing with Fedorov. I don't know how many guys
we always ask about him because he's such like a almost a mythical player.
He was coming
right?
out
like,
with
none
all
of
the,
us know him.
Yeah,
or anything.
The new gear, like Nike, all of a sudden was in the mix. You got this like. He was like the next coming of Bure, but like a better looking version and
long hair.
Was it funny to see? Because you were a little bit older at that point. Like, who the heck is this guy?
His Nike skates.
Well, I was married at the time, and he was getting all the broads. So,
so story time from Fedorov. Get the translator.
So away from the rink, I saw all that excitement. So yeah, he pretty popular guy with the girls back then, and. You know, I was able to see that, and, you know, we obviously razzed him a little bit. But from the playing side, we got along. We were a great combo. So it was me, him, and Kozlov on left wing. And Sergei, we talked all the time because he wanted the puck, and I didn't. I said, anytime I touch the I'm looking for him. So I got him the puck, and I said, I'll be by the net. I'll find the holes. This is exactly how we talked. He wanted the puck all the time, whether it was in our end, in the neutral zone, or he was so gifted, obviously, handling that puck, right? He had that ability like Gretzky did to have two or three guys that would come at him, you know, and then, you know, we're going to be open, right? So, yeah, my first year with him, I think that's when he won MVP. He had 150-some points. I had 99. But the three of us worked, you know, we worked great together for 2 years and unbelievable talent and ability. So, he was a great guy to play with for sure.
Yeah, Dino, I want to go with Tampa for a second. I know Terry Crisp was the coach there. You were, you know, toward the end of your career, were you brought into a sort of a mentor role? Did they bring that up, or did they just bring you in to provide offense? I know there was still a relatively young team there.
Well, I got traded from Detroit, right? So that was disappointing leaving. So obviously, and every time you get traded, you get a chip on your shoulder. You want to show off. You don't want to show your team you just left from that they made a mistake, you know. And so Terry was the coach there, and I got off to a great start personally. The team was doing well too. I ended up being voted into. I was first right winger, you know, all star. And I remember what's his name, Doug McLean.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, Doug was the all star coach too. So I got voted, you know, first all-star right winger. So he started our line. It was me, Gretzky, and Lemieux at the all-star game in San Jose. How cool is that?
That's unbelievable.
So decent took line. Some pictures. But anyway, that year, personally, I had a really good year. Like I said, we missed out on the playoffs. But again, Terry Crisp was the type of coach, like, it's like, Dino, if you don't want to practice, you know what you need, you know, and he was that type of guy, you know, and, you know, I kept myself in good shape, and that's what I mean. The extreme from you're going from a Terry Murray to Terry Crisp, right? Two different extremes that, you know, I probably could have played a couple more years if I would have stayed in Tampa.
Did you have roommates your whole time coming up until a certain point? Because I played with Joe Vanoski, and he told me one of the funniest stories I've ever heard in hockey about you and how you guys were rooming together, and you guys got room service, and you said, hey, go get the door. And then the room service guy come around the corner of the room, and you're under the covers acting like you're plowing abroad. Oh, my God.
That's a true story. I can't say I came up with that myself. Paul Coffey showed me that one.
How many more funny things like that were you doing? Like, you're just a clown, eh?
Well, I mean, it's frowned on upon now, the whole hazing stuff, right? And initiation, like there's a ton of stories you probably can't get into from the
initiation.
Yeah,
let's keep those ones off. We want to keep those bars.
Well, I mean, other than, you know, my first year in Minnesota, you know, I was pretty cocky, right? So, and, you know, you think you just get initiated once. Well, I rewrote the book. I got initiated three different times. So, you know, you know the old story how they used to do that. They would shave you, and they, you know, they they'd paint your whole body with stuff you couldn't get off for 2 or 3 days, you know. I mean, those were some of the funny things. You know, they tape you up to a chair and put you on it, put you in an elevator and hit every floor, right?
So you would have thought that would have taught you the lesson for getting a Scotty Bowman to keep the mouth shut, yeah. But nope, not that.
No, no, I know. But I mean, there was some funny stuff too. Like when we were in Boston, we always went out for seafood and lobster, right? So I remember back, I didn't even know who I was rooming with. They took the leftovers from the lofters, you know, the body, all that. And somebody got to my room and they took the pillow out and put all the lobster stuff, oh, you know, inside there. So pretty nasty though.
We work with a couple buddies here at Barstool who said they ran into you. I think is it Puddin' Bay on Ohio maybe? Is that a good beer drinking scene in the summer?
You guys ever been there?
No. What's the whole vibe? Is it a lake?
It's the ultimate party, like boating town. It's just crazy. They must have 7 pools. It's like being in Vegas.
Oh.
You know, I mean, you can get there by charter, but a lot of people come by boat. It's just a crazy party atmosphere. You guys are doing the show on that, right?
Well, no,
those guys he met.
Okay, yes. So we have some guys we work with at Barstool, and we're obviously a part of Barstool. And obviously, Corey ended up meeting you there, and he sent me a picture. He goes, "Look who I ran into, Dino Cicerelli." And obviously, that's how we ended up getting you on. But fuck, man, you're looking pretty good. You could maybe play a couple more years.
Well, I kept some of the good habits. I still like doing cardio. You know what I mean? I still like working out. I kept a lot of the bad habits too. I mean, I'm single now. I got 4 daughters, but just enjoying life. And I got 9 grandkids.
Wow! Good
congratulations.
Holy cow!
I'm too young. Go ahead.
I'm too young to have 9 grandkids.
What's your go-to cardio? The old guys, they love the bike. They love the bike. Just hammering out every morning.
And again, I told you, I learned from Paul. Me and Paul used to be roommates, but I learned from him when he was in Detroit, and you know that. Doing the cardio, and to this day I still do. You know, I might take one day off, but I'm probably on it 5 or 6 days a week, you know. Yeah. And there's nothing bad about doing the cardio, you know what I mean? Keeps you thin. You know, if you're stressed out, you jump on the bike.
I
and
gotta get back on it. The beer tastes better after.
Is this a Peloton ad, you know? Is this a Peloton ad?
The food tastes better, the beers taste better. You know what I mean? There's nothing wrong with it at all.
Dino, I want to go back a little ways. Well, an old team I wanted to ask about, Ally Afraidy, when you were in Washington. This guy was, you know, a legend when he was the short time in Boston. He was known for, like, lighting up his cigarettes with the blowtorch when he was fixing his stick. What was he like as a teammate?
He's cousins. He's a third-generation cousin with me.
No shit. So, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So we're he's in the Detroit area, too. Listen, I love him. He calls me cuz all the time. I see him once in a while. He's out on the water as well, but... Yeah, I mean, weird bird, but, you know, I remember we played together in Washington, but a great guy also. He'd like a cigarette, he'd have a water, he'd have a coffee, he'd have a shot of whiskey, and he'd have a beer. All 4 of them right in front of him, and he'd sip on them all. But ultimate team guy, always, always having fun too, and, you know, he's a great guy to be around.
Was that in the locker room or at the bar where you'd have the coffee, water, whiskey, and beer?
Both.
Hey, I had one last thing written down here. The stick swinging incident with Luke Richardson. You mentioned when you ended up hitting the goalie, I believe it was Raw, when he gave you the stick nut tap. What was the stick swinging incident with Luke Richardson?
Well, that was crazy. That was crazy in Toronto. You've seen the video. It was an offside, and he kind of cross-checked me right over the pants, yes. Right? So it got you right in the ribs. I remember looking at the referee. You can see it on video, and no penalty. So he comes towards me. So I get my stick up again. I'm not going to fight him. Luke's, 6'3". He's got me by 40 pounds. So he came at me, so I just, I cross-checked him once. And then I went back 3 times, and then I punched him, and then I jumped on him. So anyway, the whole thing, it goes to court because somebody, a fan in the stands, can press charges, as stupid as it sounds. So it went to court, I ended up being guilty of a misdemeanor assault, and it was a circus in Toronto, as you guys can imagine.
Oh, yeah.
I actually, they called it the pen. I actually had to go to jail for like an hour. I sat in this with all these guys in one big pen. I had a suit on. I'm signing autographs.
That's awesome.
Like one of the Hanson brothers.
Yeah.
The cops are here.
Six of them.
It was a media circus. And I remember the judge saying, he said, I can understand you. He said, you went back and forth with the stick three times, but he said, then you punched him and then you jumped on top of him. And that's why I got the misdemeanors. misdemeanor assault. So
I got one more for you. I was digging around on you. The Cicerelli Bar, it just looks like my kind of spot. It has beer pong, poker, karaoke. So I'm going to make a trip up there, but do you have our Pink Whitney there is the question.
Wow.
If not, who do we talk to get it in there?
You talk to me.
All right.
we got it. You know, we came up yesterday because, again, I was talking to some people. We got to get that. I'll get it in, I promise you, after this. So I've been going on 19 years now. Friday and Saturday night, it turns into, like, again, goes back to the music, right? So on Friday and Saturday nights, I got the DJ. We get 600-700 people in there. It turns into a big nightclub, dancing, like music videos. You know, the fog, the light show. It's
foam
it's
machine.
Vegas.
Yeah. Do you get the foam machine? I'll show up.
I don't have the foam machine, but I got the fog, and I got everything else. And it's probably 3-to-1 ratio of girls, and It's a very popular place on my side of the
world. I don't know. We're kind of into the Cocktoberfest. What do you think, guys? Do we can show up?
Karaoke tonight, Biz. We can make it in time.
Girls. We'll see you in a few hours, buddy. We'll bring the Pink Whitney. We'll bring a few cases for you guys. But
You play golf?
I do, actually. Well, I used to play. I played a lot, but not again. I live on the water. I just got a brand new boat. So
it's one or the other usually.
You can't do both.
Yeah, exactly.
It screws up your golf.
That's your MJ.
And my foursome looks a lot better on the boat than it does on the golf course.
Oh, yeah. That's what the guy said about your recent trip to that pool, whatever, I forget the name of it. Miss something?
Pudding Bay. Yeah. We had
Misties?
It was what was it called? I can't remember the name of it. But I had an attractive sixsome on my boat, put it that way.
Yeah. Nice.
Hey, if you ever need a spare tire, let me know, man. I used to ride Taylor Pyatt's coattails. I'll ride yours, buddy.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
This is awesome,
Dino. This was great, man. Thank you so much, and looking forward to meeting in person and hitting up your bar, Club 22.
I heard a lot of good things about you. I'm glad you guys got me on.
Thank you so much, Dino. Thank you for coming on with us.
Have a great one.
And giant thanks to Dino for an absolutely terrific interview. Love chatting with him. Absolute character. Hopefully everybody enjoyed it as well. Want to let you know that his interview was also brought to you by Body Armor. Today's athletes deserve much more than your grandfather's tired old salty sports drink, which is full of artificial dyes. Enter Body Armor. With potassium-packed electrolytes, antioxidants, B vitamins, plus no artificial sweeteners, flavors, or dyes, Body Armor sports drink provides hard-working hydration. My favorite flavor, I always say it, strawberry banana. Gee, I need to re-up on that. I got to have some sent back up to Boston because Body Armor helps today's athletes stay on top of their game. Body Armor helps today's athletes stay on top of their game. Body Armor, available for purchase in-store and on Amazon now. Wow, man. Dino Cicerelli, unreal stuff. Can't get over how good that interview was. Hopefully, again, all you folks enjoyed it. But, gee, we got to burn our time this time of year. TV shows, movies, got to catch up on all that. I know we talked about Maverick last week, but have you caught the new Game of Thrones show? What's it, House of the Dragon?
I have, all right. And I'm not much of a, like, I know we always talk about this in the early Chicklets days, but I don't really watch much TV. I don't really watch many movies. So the second they announced House of Dragons was coming back, that's really the only appointment television that I watch where I'm like, all right, I got to sit down at 8 p.m. on Sunday nights and watch this. And holy shit, has this not disappointed one bit. I mean, this we're two episodes in. I don't want to get ahead of myself.
Right, right.
But it's slowly making me forgive them for completely butchering the last few seasons of that of Game of Thrones, because this has been incredible so far. One note I did have was I need to watch it with subtitles, because it's just I struggle with them talking the way they do. It's like not English to me, but I mean, it's so good. The production is so good. And when they played that intro on episode two from the Game of Thrones song, oh my God, I got giddy. What are your thoughts on it all?
So far, so good. I mean, the only thing is it doesn't feel like totally new territory. Obviously, it's not up to Game of Thrones. So I think it's fun to watch, but there's also like, okay, yeah, you kind of like, all right, am I going to put all this time in and they're going to blow the ending again? Because the last season, the last few episodes, I mean, it really put a stink on the end of Game of Thrones. But, you know, I'll be pot committed to this. I didn't read any of the books. I'm certainly not going to at this point. But yeah, two episodes in are great. I just, you know, everyone loves the dragons, but you don't want them to be the focus of the show because, you know.
I agree. That's too much.
Exactly. You can't have a dragon burn shit down every week. I mean, you could show them flying or whatever, but, you know, you don't want to go to that well too often. But yeah, I'm very much pot committed right now. Going back to the subtitles, another great reason to have subtitles is to, you actually see the words written out of the places they're going, the characters. That helps me immensely. It just, you know, whether you can tell what they're saying or not, that helps me follow a show, especially one with this, with so many different characters and stuff. But yeah, I was impressed so far. It's good. I'm looking forward to the next episode. Another thing a lot of people have been watching, the Woodstock 99 doc on Netflix. Have you seen any of that? Two-parter?
All right. Actually, so I started to watch it the other day and I fell asleep. Can you explain to me the Woodstock 99, like what actually happened there? Because that was confusing to me the most, because I remember Woodstock, hearing about Woodstock in like the 70s. I didn't know there was this big debacle in 99 as well.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Woodstock, the original 1969, it was, you know, peace, love, happiness, the whole hippy dippy thing. And they had a bunch of bands upstate New York. It was 3 days of mud and sex and drugs and all that, kind of a huge historic event. And then the guy who started, I can't think of his name off the top of my head. They actually did one in 1994. Woodstock 94, which it wasn't a disaster. It wasn't a rousing success, you know, kind of came and went. But then they wanted to do the 30-year anniversary, Woodstock 99. Same thing, upstate New York. They found an old Air Force base, which they thought would be a good idea to have a bunch of people outside roasting in the hot sun with no limited water and food and all this stuff. And they booked a whole bunch of, like, I guess you call them new metal bands. What do you call it? Like Limp Bizkit and Korn. Rage Against the Machine. Well, I wouldn't really call them new metal. A bunch of, like, you know, hardcore rock and roll, that, you know, I guess like white frat boy rock, you might call it at the time. Now, I remember this going on sale. I had no desire to see it. It wasn't up my alley. It wasn't my type of music. And it ended up being a disaster. It was like they didn't have enough water. They were overcharging for everything. And people just went crazy. The crowd got so riled up by the music, I think. And the security was weakened. It became a disaster. And, you know, women were assaulted and there were fires and it was a real clusterfuck. But Netflix did a pretty good job of breaking it all down. They had, you know, the talking heads on it. And one of the promoters was, he's a dickhead. He didn't seem like he learned any lessons. It's a good watch. It was like two 1 hour episodes, but there was an HBO doc. They did one about a year ago. Same thing. Talking heads come on. But the HBO one was like, they had people who weren't even there, just kind of come and giving their opinion. And at the end, it was like so ridiculous. They were trying to make the connection between, you know, a bunch of drunk white boy, like white frat boy types in 1999 were the same people who rushed the invaded the Capitol and fucking 2 years ago. It's like, come on, will you? Like, I would love for them to find five people or fewer who were actually at Woodstock 99 who actually were at the Capitol in January 6th or whatever, year or two ago. Like, it was just such a crazy fucking ridiculous leap of logic that, you know, this is what led to that. It was a fucking music festival. So
You ever been to any crazy music festivals? Do you have any crazy music festival stories?
You know what? Never been much of a music festival guy. I was always just kind of a concert guy. Although, does Kiss 108 in Boston, do they still do the Kiss concert down at Great Woods?
They do. Yes. Yeah, they do.
Okay. That was the closest I got to a festival. I want to say 1990 or 91 I went. Aerosmith played. You know, they bring bands out for the whole duration of the day, but it's one stage. It's not like a festival, but that was the closest. But yeah, festivals never enticed me. It was just too many people, too much shit going on. I never went. I was sort of a one-man band type of guy. But anyways, then the Woodstock doc on Netflix is way better than the HBO one. You can watch them both just to kind of compare. But yeah, the HBO one was a little bit ridiculous at the end. But yeah, pretty good checking out. And then last week I mentioned the show just before we went off air on Apple TV, Blackbird. I don't think you got a chance to watch yet. Have you, G?
I have not yet. No.
Tremendous show. I don't want to spoil too much. It's about a guy who goes on. He's in jail already. Taron Egerton plays an incredible role. He's like a, you know, mob connected drug dealer. And the feds like, all right, if you can go into this jail, basically undercover as a prisoner and find out where this perceived serial killer hid bodies, we'll get your sentence cut. But he has to go into this fucking insane max prison that, like, you know, with all kinds of nuts. And that Paul Walter Hauser plays the inmate, the con. He's trying to get, you know, confession out of or find out where bodies might be hid. Gee, their acting in this is tremendous. It's based on a true story, too. So it actually happened. Me and my old lady watched a couple weeks ago. If you got Apple TV, highest recommendation, just on the acting alone. Awesome story. Well, not awesome story. It's about a fucking serial killer, but it's tremendously well done. And if you do have Apple TV, I by all means, I highly recommend it.
And one more thing before we go, yeah. I have to recommend Surviving Barstool. 8 Barstool employees stuck in the office. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. Already episode 1, Tico had a freak out. I'm team Tico. So like I think Tico got railroaded. Absolute bullshit. Also, Eddie hiding his iPhone in the room when the girls were talking. Just an unbelievable move. Stephen Shea, so diabolical. It's an incredible watch. You can watch that on the Barstool Sports YouTube channel.
Absolutely. By all means, check it out. Guess what? I'm going to movies one more time before I go to South Carolina. Guess what old movie I'm seeing on IMAX this weekend?
I would guess that you're seeing Top Gun again because you love it so much.
No, not again. Not for the fourth time, but... Dun, dun,
dun, dun. It's back?
Dun, 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 dun. Yeah, Jaws for the first time ever in IMAX on the big IMAX screen. I think it's in 3D in a few spots too, which is going to be pretty wild. So, I mean, I've seen Jaws goddamn 100 times probably, but... never in IMAX, so I'm going to check that out before the summer ends, man. It's Jaws. How do you not see Jaws in IMAX? So can't wait for that. And, hitting South Carolina and just going to finish off the summer and get a little more R&R and get revved up for the next season. But can't wait, but going to enjoy our break here.
And add a little bit to that IMDb page, all right?
Absolutely, baby. Absolutely. So like you said, G, don't forget about all our YouTube stuff, Chicklets Cup videos, old interviews, Biz Does BC, Biz Crazy Old Commercials, Jungle League East Coast series we got coming out this week.
It's called Biz Nasty Does the Coast, baby. All right. Biz Nasty Does the Coast. The next 3 Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern on the Chicklets YouTube channel. Let's go. It's incredible content.
There we go, baby. Well, everybody have a fantastic week and hopefully you enjoy Dino Ciccarelli and we'll see you in a week. As you were. As always, we like to thank our awesome sponsors here on Spit and Chicklets. So huge thanks to our longtime friends and fam over at Pink Whitney and New Amsterdam Vodka. Big thanks to everybody over at Sling TV for keeping us entertained. And a huge thanks to everybody over at Body Armor for keeping us hydrated. Have a great week, everybody.